My name is David D. Levine. I'm an award-winning writer of science fiction and fantasy. I have 4 novels and over 60 short stories published, and I've won awards, including the Hugo and Nebula. I live in Portland, Oregon. I travel a lot, and you can find my website at daviddlevine.com. I always have to use that middle initial because daviddlevine.com was taken.
This is a continuing episode of a series with David D. Levine.
So the story is set in a solar system inhabited by humanity. There's a gang of grifters and thieves who are scattered survivors of a big job gone very wrong. I like that frame. That's a very fascinating backstory. Can you tell more about the big job gone wrong and what are these grifter and thieves up to?
The name of the gang is the Cannibal Club.
Okay.
Cannibal Club, using the terminology from Leverage, consists of the mastermind, the grifter, the hacker, the thief, and the hitter. Okay. So that's what TV Tropes calls a 5-man band. And the 5 of them plus some additional characters. 10 years ago, they had what they hope would be the big job that would set them up for life, the Orca job. It did not go well. A couple people were killed. They lost the money. They lost their ship. They barely escaped with their lives. And after the job, they just scattered. There was a lot of bad blood among the members of the gang. So 10 years later, as I said, the leader of the gang's son, whom nobody knew existed, shows up and says, "I'm putting the gang back together again to break him out of jail." But as the book was developing, the situation got more and more complicated. And so the ending that the jailbreak turns into something very different than what both the readers and the characters might have expected.
Okay. All right. Who's the main character in that?
It's an ensemble piece.
Okay.
There are, and so I pulled a stunt. I pulled a writer stunt in writing this book, which I believe I have pulled off. And only one or two of the reviews that I've read indicates that people had a problem with it. So I think it succeeded. Here's the stunt. The book is divided into 5 main sections, each of which is told in first person from one of the main characters. Okay. So typically books with multiple points of view are told in alternating chapters from the different points of view. In this case, each point of view character gets an entire 20,000 word section, a whole 1/5 of the book, and so it's kind of a novella length. And actually, I did consider at one point publishing it as a series of linked novellas, but it wouldn't really work that way. So the 5 stories are told from the members of the gang as they are added back into the new gang. So each point of view section recounts from the perspective of character A, how they bring character B into the gang. And then the next section is from the perspective of character B as they bring character C into the gang. It's not quite that formulaic, but that's the overall structure. In addition, between these main first-person point of view sections, there's an interstitial, which is a flashback to the job gone wrong 10 years ago. The flashback sequences are told in first person plural. They're told from the we point of view. Okay. I think a lot about point of view. Like, for example, I have a whole theory. I have a whole model of you've got your first person and your third person, and very rarely you have your second person. Okay. And something that most people don't really think about is you can have a close third person or a distant third person. That is to say, he walked up the walk. His hands were sweating and his brain was spinning, worrying about what was going to happen next. So that's a very close third person. Okay. Or you can say He walked up the stairs and placed his hands on the door. Okay, so that's a more distant third person. It's the same grammatically speaking. They're both from that he perspective, that third person. But one of them, you're inside the person's head. The other one, you're standing some ways away. And there's a whole spectrum. There's a whole range of distance in that third person. You can be right inside the character's head. Or you can be sitting on that person's shoulder and only seeing what they're seeing, but not necessarily seeing inside their head. Or you can be focusing on that one person from a short distance away. Or you can be looking at that person from a long distance away. And the farther away you get from the character who's taking the action in that particular scene, the less it becomes that person's story, and the more it becomes a story about the person in their situation. Until you get to the point of where you pull all the way back. We were all the way back. Nobody is the person that is the person who's always the center of the perspective. But if that point of view can see inside people's heads, and especially if that point of view has a perspective or an attitude of its own, then that's called an omniscient point of view. Okay, so just as you can have a close or a distant third person, you can have a close or a distant first person. And this is something that I think everybody knows intuitively, but we very rarely talk about. Because, for example, you can say, I walked up the stairs and I was nervous and my palms were sweaty. Or you can say, I walked up the stairs and opened the door. You know, you can have a close or a more distant first person. You can also have a first person that's close or distant in time. You can say, you know, I mean, you can go all the way up to present tense. You could say, I am walking up the stairs and I am nervous. Or you can say, I walked up the stairs and I was nervous. Or you could say, yeah, I did walk up the stairs and I was nervous at the time, but I realized some years later that I shouldn't have been. Okay, so that's close and distance first person, separating the authorial viewpoint from the experience of the character in time. So a memoir is obviously a very distant first person because it incorporates not only what happened, but what you've learned about what happened in the intervening years. So the flashback sequences are in a close first person plural. It's not an omniscient point of view because you can't see into characters other than the main characters' heads, but you can see into all of the main characters' heads. So you know, we gathered around the view screen, and Fred was nervous, and Alice was dismissive. Okay, so you're seeing into the main characters' heads, and I chose this very strange first person plural point of view to emphasize the fact that the Cannibal Club was closer than family at that time. Oh. End of the Orca job, when everything went south, they shattered. They were no longer one person. They didn't, many of them didn't even like each other. And so the story is about what happened 10 years ago and how this shattered gang puts themselves back together in a new form.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. I like how you used point of view to emphasize the togetherness versus not being together. All right.
Yeah. I've pulled a lot of stunts in my prose. One of my first unpublished novel was bopping back and forth between two point of view characters, one of which like started in January and ended in December of that same year. The other one started in November of that year and also ended in December, moving through time much more slowly. So the two chapters, the two alternating points of view kind of bop back and forth in time, but they get closer and closer together. When I wrote that, I had just read a book by Ian Banks in which one of the two point of view characters was moving forward in time and the other one moving backward in time until they converged at the end of the book. And so I thought, well, if Ian Banks can do that, I can do that. Well, that novel didn't sell. I think it worked, but nobody bought it. So
yeah. It's sometimes people's audiences help certain things sell more than others.
Well, let's say I'm not Ian Banks. No, I have a high opinion of my own writing, but I recognize that, you know, I'm not Ian Banks. Okay. Yeah.
Now, being a hero is hard work because you have to put others above yourself and you need to make heroic decisions and probably risk your life. Now, in this book, I'm not sure how we're going to handle this. Are they all heroes or how do you want to frame this situation?
These are bad people. Okay, okay. This is a bunch of villains, right? Okay. Firefly is about a bunch of people who are considered criminals by their society.
Yeah.
They're outside of society, but they have the best interests of the people at heart. Leverage is also the story of a bunch of con artists, grifters, thieves, hackers, but the story of Leverage, it is explicitly a Robin Hood story, because in every episode, the gang in Leverage will get together and steal back from the man what was stolen from them. Basically, in each episode, the Leverage team meets with a person who's been victimized by somebody in power, and they get together and they run some kind of con on the person in power in order to get back what was stolen. So the Cannibal Club is not quite that altruistic. They are con artists and thieves, and they are out for themselves. But at the same time, they are going up against the man. You know, they are opposed to the corporate powers of their time. By the end of the book, you see that they are actually, you know, they're actually in a position to change the whole world in order to improve the lot of the common person. And they do throw in their lot with the common person and give up their own treasure because they recognize that there's a problem bigger than their own little issues. But they're not nice people.
Do they eat people?
They do not eat people, no.
Okay.
I've written two and sold one so far, prequel stories. There is a story called The Bucket Shop Job, which came out in FNSF the beginning of 23, which is about how Kane the Hitter joined the mob in the first place. And I have another story called The FTL Job, which is a story about how the first three members of the gang got together in the first place. And the FTL Job, which is currently in submission, answers the question of why they called themselves the Cannibal Club, which is that they recognize that as criminals, you know, any association of criminals tends to fall apart in the end because we do have a tendency to eat our own. And so in The FTL Job, the three of them are basically setting themselves up to screw the other two over and run away with the loot.
Okay.
And in the end, the three of them have to work together in order to escape. And so they take the name The Cannibal Club as a reminder that we do have a tendency to eat our own, and we need to keep an eye out for that and not do it.
I like what you've just described there. Part of the story is about the adventure of watching parts of the group create subgroups and then compete for, I don't know, whatever they're going to compete for, resources, money, etc., and screw them out and see if they get caught or they get away with it.
Yeah. Well, everybody's out for themselves, but they recognize that they'll do better if they work together.
Cool. All right.
If you enjoy listening to Sci-Fi Thoughts, but find it difficult to remember to check the website for new shows, get this technology from the future! Install into your phone a podcast player. Using this, you can subscribe to our podcast feed. And next thing you know, you'll be cruising around in your car with your phone plugged in, playing Sci-Fi Thoughts, or you'll be out there jogging, or you'll be doing whatever you want to do. And have your ears plugged into some cool science fiction programming. You can find instructions on LancerKind.com. Check out the goodies in the show notes because we've got links to David E. Levine's Wikipedia history and some other things that we picked up as we ran the series. What are show notes? Show notes show up right in your podcast player for your easy access. If you downloaded the MP3 from a website, go back to the page where you got the MP3, and there you will see the show notes. Next episode, more David D. Levine.
Max was our muscle, with a wrestler's build. His smooth, round face bore long mustachios. Kane was his assistant, long, lean, and sinewy, with a broad nose and tight black curls. Hiroshi, the accountant who had set this in motion, was not so easily reassured. "Hurry, hurry," he whispered under his breath. Though not a member of the club, he was a good enough guest not to interrupt the professionals at work, but not so good that he could keep completely quiet. His daughter, Miyuki, flinched. Clearly, in his tension, he was gripping her shoulders unreasonably hard, but her expression didn't change, and she didn't make a sound. Hiroshi was a salaryman in a gray suit, indistinguishable from any other member of the species. If he didn't have information useful to us, he'd be beneath notice. Miyuki was a good kid, we thought, smart and well-behaved, but there was something a little off about her. Some of us thought she shouldn't even be here, but Hiroshi had insisted. And, to be fair, at 19 she was only 2 years younger than Kane. Her skin was porcelain smooth, with slick black hair to match. Shweta, floating beside Hiroshi, laid a reassuring hand on his shoulder, giving him her best warm motherly look to tell him the situation was well under control, and he visibly relaxed.